Welcome back to Messy in the Middle. Joining me this week, I have a friend of the show, Lauren Loretto. Lauren, welcome back to Messy in the Middle.
Wow, it feels so good to be back.
It's been like over a year, which is kind of wild. So much has changed, right?
Yeah, I remember recording the episode in my Airbnb, so it had to be like, it had to be over a year ago.
Well, I remember when it was because it was my birthday. So it was August 22nd.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember like I forgot to block off the calendar for my birthday and then you scheduled the recording, which reminded me to block off the calendar. And then I was like, but I'll still record with Lauren. It's fine.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. That's right. Yeah. And I feel like I just talked the whole time. Like looking back, I was like, I talked too much.
Oh,
I kind of have that problem.
That's like literally the point. I kind of love it when my guests talk too much because then it's less for me to do.
Oh, that's so true. Okay, well, I'm here to talk a lot again. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
So, welcome back for those of us who don't know you already. I say us, but like for our listeners who haven't already listened to your other episode, can you give us just like your quick and dirty who you are and what you do?
Yes. So my name's Lauren Loretto. I'm the founder and CEO of Brand Good Time. We are a marketing and web development agency based in Florida, but we have clients and team members all over the U.S. That's the quick and dirty.
So I'm going to be really annoying and like continue referencing your last episode. And I'm kind of interested to see if the downloads spike after this one comes out.
Okay.
But in your last episode, I know we talked a lot about, what the process was for you selling your agency, because when we last spoke, you were in the process of like getting ready to scale your agency again after having scaled and sold an agency before. You're at right now, a little bit over a year after you started scaling your agency again. And what's been different this time?
Oh my gosh. So the last time we spoke, I had zero employees. I had contractors. And I think that I had fallen into this rabbit hole due to a podcaster who will not be named, who had launched her podcast and had a guest on. And I listened to it, and it was the most valuable episode I ever listened to. It was with Kira from The Paradigm, your BFF.
And your friend of the pod.
Correct. She's also been on my podcast, so I just love her. Anyways, I was listening, and I was like, wow, okay, I think this is what I want. And that was like one side of it. Like that was the catalyst for like, let's make this happen. Let's start hiring a team. But really, I was getting frustrated with, and I might have mentioned this on the show, but childcare. So I had an 8-month-old at the time, and childcare was rather inconsistent. And I was like getting really frustrated when I had to take a day off to be with her because my childcare would fall through or because she'd be sick, which is like from a mom side of things, that's really sounds really horrible to say, but the business stalls when I can't work, right? And so I was like, okay, if I want to have more children, if I ever want to take time off, if I want to be a good mom, I've got to figure out how I can continue to support my clients because that's also important to me. So at that point, I just started doing some research and I'm like, what is this going to take? And also we were like, client acquisition was like just kind of happening really quickly for us and successfully just based on projects we were launching and marketing and all like just the momentum that we had spent most of 2022 building. And so it came time to make that first hire. And I was consulting with another agency friend of mine and she was saying, yeah, we're looking to hire for this position. She kind of sent me the job description. I was like, wait, that sounds exactly like what I need. And that position was called a client strategy manager. And it was really someone who could just allow me to take a little bit of a step back from every single possible client meeting, from all of the project management that needed to happen with the team. And so I started hiring for that position in August. I think you remember this. And I did not find the position and the person did not start until I think like November, December. It took forever. So at the time, and I'm drawing some parallels here, so just you'll see. But at the time, the job market was so weird, like very difficult for us as agency owners or as employers to find talent. I sent 4 offer letters before I got someone who actually like committed because the job market was super competitive. I took a chance.
I knew that part.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember like I was getting so frustrated. And I ended up taking a chance on someone who was fresh out of school, But she was just the right fit, you know? Like, she had great experience from college. So, like, if you're listening to this and you're an intern or you're in college, like, for any reason, get the internships, get the experience. So I hired her, and so that happened. So that was almost a year ago. A couple months later, we hired a content manager. So now we had two people, two support members. We had a web developer and a content manager alongside the client strategy manager who managed them from a performance standpoint. Fast forward to now, almost a full year from that first hire, and we're hiring for a marketing manager so that I can take even further of a step back from being in the day-to-day of the business so I can focus on sales and marketing, and I can focus now on moving out of like self-funded clients to more businesses and brands who have funding. That's our goal space to move into. So we will still kind of work with those self-funded brands, especially on the web pillar, but we're really trying to elevate now to brands who've got more budget, more money we can play with for them, and more impact we can make. I think you and I talked about this a little bit this morning, but it's really hard when you have brands who are self-funded to go the extra mile and do everything possible that you can. Like, it's very restrictive and risky.
Yeah, because there's a lot of limitations with self-funding, and even just like, you know, if the business is funding itself, but like on a pretty tight margin, you know, you don't have that wiggle room or that extra money to play with and like take a risk that, you know, is calculated and is, you know, data informed. I know like you're super big on data, but like there's still that risk element, and it's like, do we want to even go down the Facebook ads rabbit hole to get the visibility that we need and to get the, you know, people to enter into our ecosystem if we can't afford to blow $1,000 that just like might never come back? And that's something that is like always going to be there, is like this temptation of like, oh, Facebook ads, it's like turning on money, but like, it's also like flushing money down the toilet if you don't do it right. And you need some time to figure out how to do it properly.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, that was a long-winded answer of explaining like where we were then and where we are now. But it's crazy. Like, we also have an intern who is an employee. So I just learned so much about employees versus contractors and company culture, employee handbooks, like everything that you want to create that successful trajectory, but also have happy team members. So yeah, a year ago, I was way more involved in client stuff. Today, I feel like I am thrust into, you know, a lot of team involvement, which is also not what I expected and anticipated. And I can't say it's my favorite thing ever, but the byproduct of that, which is more clients, more people we can support, more results, like that part's really cool. It's just also fun to like see projects come to fruition that I didn't even touch or have any involvement with except for just the sales call.
Right.
Which is so weird. So weird.
I remember a couple weeks ago, I took the day off to go to Six Flags, which was like the silliest, like, I have adult money, I can do what I want kind of thing. Like, my friends got together and we all went to Six Flags, and I realized I had a client meeting that day, and I got to leave like my pretty new team member. She'd been with me like, I think, 2 months, to lead that meeting. And like, not only was it awesome to be able to not have to like reschedule the meeting or worry about it while I was gone, it was also like, I completely lost my train of thought. Oh my God. How did I?
It was nice to not go to that meeting.
It was nice to not go to that meeting.
And enjoy the day.
It was also nice to be able to like trust that she could handle it, because like she was onboarded properly and she was like given that kind of like trust, and it was like felt really great from like a hiring perspective to know that, because I've had some dicey experience with hiring, to know that I was like still able to be good at it after like some not so awesome experiences in the past. But yeah, getting to sit out of those meetings sometimes just to like live your life is really nice.
Yeah. Oh man. I agree. It's twofold. It's to live your life, and it's also to like, I don't know what your calendar looks like, but I feel like my white space is chunked. It's not like, small chunks, not the big chunks that we all want, small chunks. And so not having to go to some of those and get that time back too, just to do what you need to do to push your business forward, if that's what you want to do on the flip side, like, awesome. Yeah. Like, I feel the same. Like, I'm taking a couple days off this month, like, you know, Jesse's birthday, I have family coming into town, or, you know, my mother-in-law and father-in-law decided to come during the week to visit. you know, Monday through Saturday. So I can, like, you know, afford to take a couple hours here and there, or pick Jessie up early from school, so, like, they're able to spend time with her. And yeah, I think that's the beauty of, like, being a business owner and deciding that you want to be in this position to scale. But I don't think it's for everyone. Like, you have to be, you have to have thick skin. You also have to be a little bit of an empath. I find myself in a lot of situations, like, hearing about the problems of a team member, and I'm kind of like, well, that sucks. But then at the same time, I'm like, no, I'm their leader. Like, I need to be an empath. I need to say, I'm so sorry. Like, I can imagine that's really hard. And sometimes I'm just like, do you want to, like, put your problems in a pile with mine and maybe take yours back? Because that doesn't sound like it's a lot. Yeah, I struggle with that.
Yeah, well, I think it's also, too, like, listening to the story of, like, how things are different and how things have changed and are changing. It's also, like, a really important lesson in leveling your expectations and, you know, realizing that there's a lot of gray area in between. Oh, I can take a couple of days off because the team has it handled and my calendar is back to back for the next 3 weeks. I go to the doctor, like, that, like, super packed schedule, to, like, having a little bit of white space and having the, you know, room to actually enjoy the benefits of being an entrepreneur and getting to control your own schedule. And I don't think I'm literally, like, gonna name the podcast in the podcast, but, like, that's very much that messy middle area that we don't really talk about as often and we don't get as much, like, resources about. It's a lot of, like, oh, get out of hustle and, like, make money while you sleep, or, like, outsource everything and, like, you'll have your life back. But, like, there's a lot in the middle of that where we're, like, getting our team ready to be outsourced to, and, you know, working hard even though we do have that support, and, like, somehow the more money is coming in than you've ever had before, but you're also, like, taking home less of it somehow. Like, there's so much that happens in that space, and it's nice to, like, know that you're not alone when you're going through all of that.
Oh, totally. Hearing you say passive income made me want to throw up, though.
I agree. I think I was talking to someone about this earlier this week. I don't remember if it was on the podcast or just, like, a casual, like, chat. But, like, passive income is not passive. And, like, you have to do so much to scale the type of thing that can become passive income. That's, like, it goes back to that, like, conversation of risk. Like, do you have the money up front to put into developing the content and creating, you know, social media and, like, running ads and doing all of that stuff to get the visibility to make the passive income worth it? And if you don't have all of that, like, at the ready, then you probably shouldn't do it. And no one's telling you that, because they can't make money off of it.
Yeah. It's a tricky space to be in. And, yeah, we struggle with that with even some of our clients. You know, it's like, one of our clients, we're like, okay, we need a paid avenue. Like, we need a paid avenue. There's only so much we can do organically. If you want quicker wins, if you want to shorten this timeline, like, you have to have a paid avenue. It's a struggle. I know you feel the pain.
Yeah. Well, it's like, there's paid avenue can result in those quicker wins and those, you know, higher revenue, more visibility, all of that stuff. But it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
And when we're spending all of that money and spending all of that time, it can feel like I need this to happen tomorrow. Like, if I'm used to having someone book a sales call with me and then, you know, make their decision right then and there and be on my client roster by the end of the week, why did I just spend that entire client's revenue on Facebook ads and then, like, got 6 calls and no one booked anything? Like, it's hard to, I think, draw those parallels and, like, level expectations in that way, because it's a completely different beast.
Well, yeah, and at the same time, how do we as marketers not also blame the client for pieces of the process that we can't control? So, like you're saying, like, hey, you know, we're driving all this traffic your way, you're getting on sales calls. With our clients, we always ask for that sales call feedback. Sometimes we ask them to record the calls because we want to make sure that, like, the experience is replicated from what we're doing in marketing all the way through the sales call. It's like, it's not, I'm not sales. If you don't book the call based on, or if you don't close the call based on the traffic I drove, it's either they weren't qualified, which nothing, well, there's a lot marketing can do about that, but you know, if they weren't qualified, they weren't qualified. But if they were qualified and you couldn't close, that's not our fault.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one. And also just, like, I think in marketing in general, a lot of times it feels like the weight of our business is weighing on us, but also, like, the weight of all of our clients' business and all of our clients' problems. And, like, the marketing could be great, the sales experience could be great, but, like, what if the product sucks? What if you're selling something nobody wants to buy? Like, how do you as a marketer give that feedback or help that client, like, come to that realization on their own?
Well, funny you should ask. I know you commented on a post I put up in Entreprenista. Mm-hmm. I'm not ignoring you. I'm just waiting on the client. But that is a case in point example of why, like, this particular client's entering in a 90-day plan with us. We're not doing a full, like, 6-month or 12-month container because this client's launching a product that hasn't been user tested. And so I said, we can't move forward with marketing until we have user testers, feedback, and we've optimized what this is. Now, it's a course, and it's backed by, like, a real – it was built by a very large name in the course industry. Mm-hmm. So it's – and I've skimmed it. Obviously, I know a lot about the course because I'm in and out of it. But that's the exact reason is, like, until you have user testers – we do this on both sides of our pillars, by the way. So, like, through marketing and through web design, we have user testers for both sides because we have to make sure that at the end of the day, the client experience is really good. Like, it's just not a good look for anyone if at the end of the day the product sucks. You know, it's like it's embarrassing for us as the marketer because we took on a project without fully vetting what we're selling. And it's embarrassing for them because they might feel lied to that, you know, oh, yeah, we can definitely sell this. And then that ends up not being the case at all. It's hard. You're like what you said about wearing the weight of that is so true from both sides.
Yeah, well, it's like that product market fit. And I think it also speaks to, I did a podcast episode about this a few months ago, like the 4 P's of marketing that you learn, like in school or whatever, which as a refresher for anyone listening are product, price, placement, and positioning, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There might be another P in there. There's like so many different versions, but like product is there and product comes first because if you don't have a product that is priced in a way that the people you're selling to want to buy it, like it doesn't matter where you put it, it doesn't matter how much traffic you drive to it, like the product is as much a part of the marketing process as, you know, figuring out whether you should be on TikTok or Instagram.
Yeah, no, that's so true. That's a whole other can of worms too, is like channels and all of that. I'm in the middle of hiring for a marketing manager, and it's really interesting to ask the questions of, like, what KPIs do you track? How do you determine what channels someone should be on? And sometimes, and some of these responses, I'm just like, like, from both ends of the spectrum, I'm like, okay, wow, he knows his stuff. Versus, like, she's clearly only ever worked on one brand in her whole life. You know?
I can also speak from the, like, being on the interviewee side of things there because maybe, like, a year and a half ago, like, I was thinking about not doing my business anymore, like, going and getting a full-time job. And, like, going through the interview process places, like, they'll ask you a question and you know the best answer is it depends. But when you say that in an interview, like, I felt like such an idiot so often. Like, I would get feedback from interviews that were like, oh, you seem overqualified for this position. And I'm like, really? Because I've never felt stupider than trying to answer your questions because I could never just, like, give a straight answer because it's always like, well, it depends on, you know, what the client is. It depends if they already have a following. It depends on if they're willing to do paid or if they have or get, like, there's so many variables that it's hard to give a straight answer to a question in an interview like that.
Honestly, though, that's the answers I'm looking for in that type of interview because I want to see that you're, like, not giving me a one, like, showing that you're, like, well, it depends. And, like, you're sitting there thought processing it tells me, like, great, you're going to be a good fit because we have a lot of different types of clients and it's not going to be one size fits all.
Yeah, but I think just, like, it's still – you feel stupid in the moment.
Totally, totally. I feel for the people I'm interviewing right now because – And sorry that this is such a hot topic in this conversation, but, like, I am in the thick of interviewing people, so it's, like, in my brain.
No, I love it. We are a pro-employee podcast.
Okay. yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk all about it.
Yeah, I mean, just, I feel for some of the people in the interview. Like, I feel intimidated by a few, and then most of them I'm like, oh, man. Like, I know what it would feel like to be in your spot. Like, I try and put myself in their shoes to answer the same question. And when they say things I would say, I'm like, okay, that's, like, reassuring. And then sometimes I learn something, but I feel, because, like, you don't always know what question's going to be, what tools to work with in that moment. In my second interviews for this specific position, actually, I sent the questions ahead of time. So the first interview is more like, what do you know about our company? And, you know, are you qualified to work in the U.S.? Like, you know, things like that, confirming pay and, like, culture right. fit and stuff like that. The second interview, I send all the questions prior because I'm like, hey, we're going to get deep on, like, marketing examples and know-hows. Like, I want to know your thought process on these things. Like, come to the meeting prepared with that.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I remember once I had a second interview for a position like that, and, like, the whole time they were grilling me on, like, these very specific details of, like, what would you do in this situation for, like, our specific thing? And I'm like, I'm not supposed to know that.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening right now?
It's like the SATs when, like, the one of the answers is does not have enough information.
Exactly.
Like, there's not enough information to complete this problem.
Yeah. So, what has your process for hiring been like? Because I know you and I talked about this a little while ago, like, how I think we have very different, like, company cultures. Yeah. And I also think we have very different hiring processes, because I feel like every time I hire, I'm like, the job is posted on Monday and I'm sending out an offer letter by Friday. And, like, yeah. That I feel like is not your experience.
No, it's not. Well, remember how I talked about, like, white space in my calendar? I don't have that much. So, like, yeah. Scheduling people in is a whole thing. I also don't – yeah, this is such a good question. I hope this is insightful for anyone listening, because I do think I do things very differently. But it's worked. Like, it's worked really well for us. And it's proven with one employee. I've retained her almost a year. Like, it was a very thorough process. So first thing I do is obviously formulate the job description. And I try and make it really fun. Like, you got to match your company culture. So for me, it's like – you know, this is a good fit for you if you love to have a good time. Like, it's like the way the job description's worded is specific. But the job description's also coupled with an application, and we do Google Forms for that. And it is like a 15 to 20 question application. What are you obsessed with out of work? Why do you think you're qualified for this position? Tell me about all the software you've used. Like, there's some fun questions mixed in with, like, I just want to make sure you read the job description. Like, let's confirm that. Someone just applied from overseas. And, like, in the job description, it's, like, U.S.-based only. And then the last question is, like, do you meet all the qualifications? And the person put yes. And I'm like, okay. So, like, literally, I'm going to go ahead and strike you through. So that has made it really easy to narrow down who I'm going to interview. But before we even get there, like, then you have to post the job. So my tried and true, like, platform for job postings has always been LinkedIn. The free version will get you the right amount of people in a very short amount of time, but they close it pretty quickly too. Once they get enough clicks to the, like, application, they actually will close it. And so that happened to me. So from there, so this is about, like, 2 weeks, a 2 week process. From there, I then put the job on Indeed, and I put a qualifying question in. This was actually something from Kira that I, like, took from her. I put a qualifying question in, and it's basically, like, before someone can just apply to the job on Indeed, they have to answer the question, which is, like, what stood out at you about working for Brand Good Time, or, like, check our social medias or whatever, what stood out at you. If they didn't answer that, I automatically rejected the application. If they answered it and I liked their resume and their submission, I send them a message and to the link to the actual application that LinkedIn has. So it's just another way to, like, pool in any other applicants who may have missed that short window of time on LinkedIn. Same time I post to Indeed. So LinkedIn eats first. The same time I post to Indeed, I also post to our social media channels, because that's the other thing. I always end up interviewing people who are lurkers, who I'm like, oh, you have your own business. So there's actually someone I want to talk to you about after this call who I found out, you know, Kira knows, and, like,
oh yeah.
Okay. Do you know who it is?
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Who applied, and, like, I did not realize that until I got deep, and I was like, oh my gosh, what a great candidate. So you just never know. So, like, I post to those channels too. So I really, like, I give this a long runway for applications because I'm not going to sit here. Like, I used to sit there and, like, look at every single one that came in as they came in. I don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. So I go through, I look for basic qualifiers. I may not, like, strike people off right away. You know, like, if I'm like, oh, their salary expectation is $30 more an hour than I can afford. Like, I may not strike them off right away, but there's some other little things that, like, I can tell if they didn't answer a question the right way, that they have no attention to detail, or if there's spelling issues. Like, those are automatic strike-throughs on mine, mm-hmm. on my end. Like, we really need someone with attention to detail. And, like, if you're going to have all these spelling errors, like, I don't even want to interview you, sadly. So, yeah. So from there, I pick about 10 people. I send the interview requests. If they all book, then cool. But I try and get to, like, 10. And then I'm interviewing in a two-week period. So this is probably ends up being, like, a 3 to 4 week process. Mm-hmm. So I interview in that two-week period. The first week, I really try and get those 15-minute, like, initial interview out of the way. Here's what I do differently with that one. I send the interview request. If they book, I send them another email and I say, great. Backing up. I send them the initial interview email, and in that email, I confirm the not so great things about the job. So I say, like, hey, this is an hourly, not a salary job. That's only 30 hours a week. This is a part-time job. And then, like, you know, there's really nothing else that's, like, not great about it, but, like, this position I'm thinking of in particular. But if there's anything that I'm like, this would totally ward someone off if they got to the call and, like, perhaps did not remember that they read that in the job application, whatever it is, mm-hmm. I don't want them to book if that's going to be an issue. So I do that. And then I also send a link to a video. I record a new one every time, explaining about, like, every time we have a job posting, I mean. So it's, like, the same video for every job posting with a visual overview. And I kind of take it from our quarterly all hands deck from the team, of who Brand Good Time is, the services we offer, the types of clients we work with. I make that a video, and then I also kind of explain the position, who they're going to be reporting to, what they're really doing, like, deeper than what the job description does. And I also include a link to our case studies. I do that for a big reason, too. And I say, watch this before you book, because there are some people who might apply or go ahead and book, and they're super overqualified and, like, working for, like, the types of businesses we work for in a B2B-only space when all they've ever done is, like, Fortune 500 B2C. Like, that's not going to be a good fit unless for some reason that's what they want. But I just like to reconfirm all those. What that also does is it saves time in the interview, because I like that first interview to be 15 minutes, but I also want them to have time to ask questions. And
that
usually
was my biggest regret the last time I hired was that I didn't do something like that, because I spent the first, like, 5 minutes of every interview, like, speed talking my way through as, like, fast as humanly possible, yeah. Like, who we are, what we do, what kind of clients we work with.
Yeah, that has saved me so much time. And I will say, honestly, any person who's ever gone through the interview process with us has come to the call and said, thank you for that. And with this round of interviews, every single person has had the same 3 questions, which is so funny. Like, it's stuff I'm, like, going back. I'm like, I should probably have addressed that in the call, but, like, or in the video, but they would have had double the amount of questions had I not done that. And so it's really been helpful, and everyone appreciates it. They're like, wow, thank you for doing that. No one's ever done that in an interview process for me. Like, it gave me a lot of great context. And usually they're really energized and they're more comfortable on the interview because they feel like they know you already. They've met you kind of for a second already. You get through the basics of the interview and then schedule the next call. So that's a very long-winded answer to why our process is and why it's different. But yeah, it's not a week. It's way longer for us.
Yeah. I've done it in so many different ways. Like, the first time I ever hired, I hired, our friend Meg to, like, help me go through the hiring process because she had a hiring agency. And this was, like, December, November 2020. So we got, I think, 300 applications in, like, 2 days.
Wow.
Like, it was so many people. And it was a long application, like, with questions. It was, like, a form, like everything, like you just said. We got that in 2 days. And I was like, holy shit. This is insane. I'm so glad I hired someone to, like, help me figure all of this out. We did, like, a paid test project. We did 2 interviews. Like, it was, like, very intense. But then that hire wound up, like, not working out after a few months. So I was like, oh, damn. Then I did it again. A similar process, but, like, pared back a little bit because thankfully we didn't have that many people apply. Like, not the 300 or whatever.
Yeah.
And there we found three people. I hired three people when I was initially only going to hire one because it was like, this person checks this box, this person checks this box, this person checks this box. Like, perfect. It'll be great. And one of them lasted like 2 weeks. One of them lasted like a year. And one of them lasted 2 years, which I was really happy with. And then this last time I hired, I was going on vacation and I knew I needed to hire help before I went on vacation. Like, just because I needed to know when I came back, I wasn't going to be facing like the rest of my business alone because I was just like absolutely burnt out. I was like, I cannot handle another week of this. Like, I think if I hadn't gone on vacation when I did, I wouldn't have made it through the month of August. Like, it was very intense. So my hiring process for that round was like, I posted in a Facebook group that was literally just like, email this email address with your resume and you don't even need to write a cover letter. Like, just say hi. I was like, just send me something. And I'm so glad I did that because I also posted on Indeed and Indeed kept shutting down my application. Like, it kept shutting it down for having too many people apply. I added like a qualifying question so that it wouldn't do that. And people, it was like, do you live in the state of Pennsylvania? And people would just say yes, even if they didn't. They'd be like, I live in New Jersey. That's close enough. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Oh my God.
I'm not registering as an employer in another state. You can't make me do it.
Yeah.
And then so thankfully I posted in that Facebook group because I wound up finding someone. And it was like such a great fit. I found – that's like a whole other story for a whole other podcast. But I found someone. It was a great fit. It was fantastic. But it was like three very different hiring processes, three very different, you know, candidates that worked in varying ways. But yeah, I'm like kind of dreading having to hire again because I just like don't want to have to go through figuring out what my hiring process should be because I know it needs tweaks, but I don't have the energy to do what you do.
Oh man. Well, it's not that daunting at the end of the day, like honestly. And if it gets you the right candidate, if it gets you no one, it gets you no one. And like,
yeah,
look at it as a learning process. I don't know.
I think LinkedIn is an interesting place that I hadn't thought of, and it's interesting that I hadn't thought of it considering how LinkedIn heavy I am.
Yes, like, that is so
it
interesting.
It never even crossed my mind to post it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, you should. You should. That's I think that's where I found my last two hires. I think so. Yeah. So I totally recommend it. But yeah, we have some interesting applicants too from people who just like I know personally. They came out of the woodworks and I'm like, had no idea you had marketing know-how. That's wild. You know, yeah.
So. I think it's like always so awkward when people, you know, apply for stuff though. Like I've had some people like apply for every job I've ever posted. And I'm like, I don't want to tell you that you're never going to work for me. But like, I didn't hire you the last three times.
Yeah.
Stop. I don't know.
Stop.
Because it just feels bad. Like, I don't know.
Where does equal employment opportunities come in there? Oh man.
It's completely based on lack of qualifications. There's nothing to do with like whether or not this is several people that I'm just like, you don't know what I need you to know for this job.
Yeah.
I know you don't know it because I see you talk about it in other places. Like,
oh no, that's awkward.
That's really awkward.
That's really awkward. I often worry about like getting into hot waters with employment stuff, but meh.
It's like we try really hard to keep all of that, like, I'm trying to, like, figure out the best way to say it. Like, we try really hard to, like, be an equal opportunity employer.
Yes.
And interview a diverse range of candidates from, like, every possible perspective except for their marketing knowledge.
Correct.
That has to be on par. It's not discrimination if you don't know marketing.
Well, yeah.
It's just a fact.
Basic requirements.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So, what else has been going on?
Oh, man. Well, we just revamped all of our services, which the process.
Is it still on your website?
I don't think so.
Okay.
When you started, like, no, I don't think you are. When we started hiring content managers and stuff like that and you started scaling your business, I was like, let that girl roam. Let her go. Let her live on her own two feet.
I was just curious because I remember like thinking about it the other day. I was like, I wonder if I'm still on there.
I don't want
to ask her to take me down, but like she probably should.
Yeah, if we're not actively working on clients together, then
yeah.
Yeah. But thanks for asking. Yeah, so I actually worked with a business development coach recently, and this is honestly still to this day the only account I actively consume content from on social, because I feel like everyone else is just a, what's the term I'm looking for? A vacuum, not a vacuum, echo chamber. All these other accounts, like, sidebar, there's some famous, by that I mean, like, they have, like, 50,000 followers, 30,000 followers on Instagram, social media management companies who are all posting the same thing right now, and it is all, you can't hire a social media manager for $500 a month, and you can't charge $500 a month. Have you seen these posts?
I don't follow a lot of people.
Okay, no, that's honestly a good thing, but I've also seen it on LinkedIn. It's following me everywhere. And I'm like, I don't know why this is a trending topic all of a sudden, but this is what makes me mad about service providers in the marketing space, is like, it's an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. So when I come across someone who isn't, I'm highly intrigued by them and I'm more likely to purchase from them. So let that be a nugget to anyone listening to this who's like trying to come up with original content. Just come up with the original content. Just do it. Like, if you think it's weird, who cares? Post it. And so anyways, I came across this business development coach who actually like booked a sales call with me. And when she booked the sales call, I looked into her and I was like, I don't care if you don't work with me. I need to work with you. Like, right. So she had this background in, her name's Melissa from Waverly. I think it's Waverly Ave Consulting, for anyone who's like, who is this person? And she works specifically with agency founders, like our range. Mm-hmm. And she comes from an agency background. She has 10 years in biz dev at like a corporate agency. And so I trust. I trust. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to lift up and out of strategy, which is what obviously what I'm hiring for right now. I'm ready to be the face, if you will, and like do what I want to do now in the business. Like, I feel like I've built the business. We're good. I have things I just don't like to do anymore. Part of that is being in the day-to-day of strategy. And it's not just that. I also feel like I'm doing our clients and our team a disservice by not bringing someone in who's potentially more qualified than me and can provide better results. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, you know, I know what I know. I know what I like to do. What I like to do is speak. So podcasting, stages. I like to go to conferences. I love to network and I love sales. Like, I don't see myself letting go of the sales call portion of what I do for a very long time. I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So, I figured, okay, like, I'm always trying to see what's that next big investment I want to make that's going to push the business. HR was one thing, you know, because I want to invest in my team. Finance is another. So, I have a financial consultant, a CFO. Leadership was one. So, I worked with a leadership coach. And now it's like, okay, business development. If I'm stepping up and out of strategy, I have more space for biz dev. And so, this girl just came across my plate at the right time. And so, I did a one-off session with her. And she opened my eyes to, like, a lot of things. So, like, Entrepreneurista was one of the things she recommended. She's like, you need to go to a couple conferences a year. Here are all the ones I recommend. She also looked at, like, our lead quality, lead volume, and, like, close rates. And she's like, you're good. She's like, I don't know why you're beating yourself up, but, like, 2 to 3 sales calls a week and a 70% close rate is, like, really good. Like, you should be proud of yourself for that. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. My services really needed developing, though, because there was no real, like... We're in a market right now, I'm sure you're feeling this too, where people are not just like building a quiz for fun. They're not just making a new website because they have a vision and they want it to be pretty. They're not investing in social media management for maintenance. People are in a time where for some reason we have more consumers than ever, but the economy's weird and somehow people aren't buying. And so there's like trend. It's so strange what's going on in the world of like consumerism from both a B2B and a B2C perspective. So as a marketer, like, you have to be growth focused right now. Mm-hmm. You like the way you sell has to be value driven, growth focused. And so she really helped me look at our services and figure out how we can position that. And I'm proud to announce we finalized it yesterday. But yeah, we're rolling out retainers for the marketing side, for the website side of what we do. We've also figured out how to get people from, so we have 3 tiers of like our marketing strategy retainers, two of them are implementation, one is not. And the one of, there's like two implementation, one is accelerate growth and one's maintain authority. Maintain authority is for the people who like just manage my channels, keep doing what you're doing, working towards the strategy we already built. And the other one is like, they're constantly launching. So, and they're sliding scale based on number of platforms we're managing. So if it's email, social, whatever, like there's a sliding scale there. So I'm like thrilled because we finally figured that out. And I think that was like my hardest sticking point, as I always thought like we can make so many money on projects, but that's so volatile. So many money. We can make so much money on projects. We can make so many money. I think that's what I said. But that can be volatile because then you're constantly out there having to do sales. Whereas you get someone on a project, you increase the lifetime value of a client. So that's this like sweet spot we're in right now. So the best advice I received, and I'm going to pass that along to everyone here, it all starts with the sales process. So in the sales process, I've been maybe planting the seed whether when it's a project that they're buying into. So whether it's a 90-day plan or a website, I'm going ahead and I'm planting the seed that there's a value-driven like continuation of the service when you're done. So if you're coming in for the website side of what we do, hey, by the way, we're going to put a strong SEO focus on the front end of like, we're going to do research, we're going to do an audit, we're going to see what you're ranking for, we're going to look at your competitors, and we're going to try and help you create a baseline with this. And this also stemmed, sidebar, from like a client who decided not to work with us because she said she looked up our clients and they weren't ranking on Google for their names. First of all, yeah, that sucks. Like, no one ever wants to hear that. Secondly, those clients launched their website with us and then went away. But I blame myself for not like adding that value early on with the client to tell them like, hey, it's not just set and forget. If you want to rank for your name, if you want to rank for certain keywords, like it involves ongoing work. And so that's kind of what we've baked into our website side of things now, is like, what is the value add for growth for our clients? And so we're losing a couple clients in 2023. Not great. Clients who've been with us for a really long time for a couple different reasons, you know, like none of them are blaming work performance. One client went in a completely different direction with their business, like went from being a big team to one person. So it just doesn't make sense. Yeah. It doesn't make sense with the way that they're running their business anymore. And the other client, you know, I don't know how we want to say it because you know this person, but just wants to take a break, we can call it, you know, from like a failed launch, if you will.
I have no idea what you just said because it like cut out, but I think it's still recorded on your end. So I'm just gonna react to it. Yeah, exactly. That's so right, Lauren. And all of this is staying in the podcast.
No, I was saying one client went from a big team to a small team. The other client, let's just call it a failed launch that extended the course of a year. And I know you know this client because we've worked on them together. But just like, I think this was a case of a wrong market fit.
Yeah.
And a challenging audience given the constraints and limitations.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that, again, like the wrong like market product fit comes back to, you know, it's taken you however long in business and like working with a consultant to really like reevaluate your offer suite and come up with the right thing for the market for right now. And I think sometimes, especially when we're not in the marketing mindset, we just have an idea and we're like, of course this is a great idea, I would buy it, and don't really think about like, but are enough people gonna buy it to make it worth it?
Yeah.
I think that like keeps coming back as the lesson that we're learning today.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, it really does. And that's what makes what you do so valuable and powerful with all the market research. Like we can't get that deep a lot of the time. Like we're working with hopefully what market research has already been completed and like what we can glean from the audience that we have. But it's so hard when a client comes to you and you have to take a step back and put yourself in their shoes. They know they need marketing. Every business knows they need marketing, and it's like this necessary evil to them because it's like, yes, marketing means like it's going to get more people to see my business, even though most people look at marketing as like marketing is going to get me more sales. I love correcting people and saying, hey, we can work together for 90 days and you're going to have zero ROI because we need a 90-day runway to even create visibility. And that's what marketing does. Sales, we're not a sales company. Right. You're the salesperson. You have a sales team. Like, that's your job to convert the business most of the time, unless we're speaking about e-com. But, like, we work in B2B, so, like, usually there's a handoff. You know, we can track things like form fills. We can track things like phone, like, you know, button click, stuff like that. And like, that's going to tell us effectiveness of marketing, but closing the sale is not our responsibility at the end of the day. And most clients come to us, the marketer, knowing that necessary evil, knowing they need marketing and just not understanding what goes into that. And thinking it's a quick fix. And so that at the same time, they can be so trusting. And there are plenty of marketers who have burned businesses that way too, you know, like thinking they know what they're doing or promising things or promising that they can do things that they're actually not capable of doing either. So,
yeah, I think the like false promise of like, we can take marketing completely off your plate is like, no, you can outsource your marketing, but if you're going to be an involved business owner, you are never going to stop thinking about it because like,
you can't
to be involved. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So even from, we say that with our clients too. That's why our mission at our company, not to be like brand good time, but like that, no, that is literally why our mission says like, we only work with business owners who want to play an active role in their visibility. And that is actually, it's less of a mission and more of a boundary that we set because we need brands who can give us what we need. And we're very upfront about that. Like, hey, the first 30 days is going to be pretty intense for you because we need to be downloaded into your business. We need deliverables from you. We're not able to, like, we're not your brain, so we can't get it all. But after that, like, yeah, you can expect things to get lighter and go smoother. It's the same with, I think, a larger company. Having worked in a larger company, having worked for a corporation, like, CEOs are still walking into marketing meetings. And they're still, like, they have to have a pulse on those things no matter what. You have to know like what's your brand reputation? What do we know about our audience? Like that goes into every facet of what a founder has to know and understand to continue to grow their business too. So this is not just like a small business thing. There's a ripple effect across organizations. That's why there's like, I mean, I don't know. When I worked in corporate, we had to create reports and we still create those reports in the business today. It's probably pretty silly for some of the brands we do, but like we always have what's called, we literally say an executive summary at the top. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we even produce snapshot reports. And the idea for that is, sure, we're going to deliver it to the client. Sometimes the client isn't the founder. Sometimes the client's like a team member or a marketer at the company. It's for them to understand what's going on. But should they need anything to show the CEO, if the CEO is like, what the F are we doing in marketing? Funnel the executive summary up to them and they should know exactly what's going on. So yeah, all this to say like marketing is not like we built Brand Good Time to say like we actually want to make marketing fun again. But really what we're doing behind the scenes is shouldering a lot of like the not fun stuff. Yeah. We're trying to make it fun for you. So like you see the results, you like what's being produced, but you're not having to worry about the heavy logistics that go into it. Because it's a lot.
Sure is.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, so much of marketing is, like, on, you know, how on TikTok, well, you're not on TikTok. But like,
I am, kind of. Like, I pop in and out.
There's, like, the marketing girlies that's, like, flowers and sunshine and rainbows and Instagram. And then there's the marketing girlies that's, like, data and spreadsheets and charts. And it's, like, we do the data and spreadsheets and charts so that you can do the flowers and Instagram and, like, rainbows and sunshine.
Yes. Did you not see our reel? We did inspired by that.
Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
No. So it was like, yeah. No, it was like Hope like bouncing around taking pictures of disco balls and like I'm on a phone call like yelling and then like I'm on my computer and the sticky notes say like very important email. Yes. Yeah. So I get it. And like it's so funny in the business. I am the serious data girly and everyone else is like, I'm spinning like a ballerina. You know?
So we don't find people. Okay.
You're glowing. Did you go to heaven?
No, I feel like I'm in hell. Not like in this recording, but like
okay,
in general.
But pivot. What's the temperature there right now?
Maybe like high 50s, low 60s.
Wow, that sounds really nice. Do you go for a lot of walks?
I'm gonna go for a walk today. I've been like, so I had COVID in September, and I feel like it's literally taken me until now to like be able to walk upstairs again without being absolutely destroyed. So
Yes.
yeah, I'm gonna go for a walk today, but it hasn't been great just like being a person.
Oh no, I understand. I had COVID in my second going into my third trimester, so like
Ooh.
yeah, I basically spent my last trimester in pain. No,
Maybe
I
it would
know.
have
It
been
takes a
like
long
that
time.
anyway.
No, exactly. I was like, is this masking what actually would have happened? Like, or is it the
Right.
same? Yeah, no, that recovery from COVID is brutal. No one really talks about that.
No, well, the first time I had it, because I had it twice now, it wasn't that bad. But last time just like absolutely destroyed me. And I was very much like, I don't have time for this. Like,
Yeah.
I have shit to
No, yeah.
do. Well, I think that instead of talking about COVID for another 20 minutes, we should wrap this podcast up and tell people where they can find you online and how they can give you money. Unless they were thinking about giving me money, in which case we'll fight over
Yeah, so like we are not in competition with each other in
it.
many ways, but like if you need a quiz or like marketing strategy or anything, like we do marketing strategy too, but like give Haley a shot too. Give us both. Why don't you interview us both? No, I'm just kidding. We're different in our own ways.
Well, I
But
think
yeah.
it's part of why we've worked so well together is like if you're
Yeah.
starting from zero or like starting from very low, I'm a great place to start
Yeah.
for like the research and the background and the offer suite development. But if you're like, I've got my shit together and I need to get moving, like 90-day strategy, lay it on me, that's a great way to turn to Lauren.
No, that's so true. That's so true. And yeah, so I'll use that as a segue. Like our base level for marketing strategy is like you need to have an established brand. You like need to have entered some sort of success and have like some funding to be able to work with us, and for us to be able to do our job. And so that's like the marketing side of what we do. But we also build websites. So we do essentially VIP days for websites based on templates, so semi-custom, but we also do fully custom, and we can do everything, pretty much everything in the realm of web development except take photos of you and do branded imagery. We have recommendations for people, especially if you're like all over the US. Like we have photographers everywhere. So, you know, we really love doing both sides of the things, web design and development, but also like, you know, SEO and furthering your reach, and then, you know, the marketing strategy and marketing development side of what we do. So actual implementation with email funnels, social media, traditional marketing. Listen, you wanna wrap a truck or you want a billboard, we will come up with a funny tagline. We've got you. So we kind of do it all under the organic umbrella. But if you want to come hang out on social, Brand Good Time on Instagram is a fun place to be. I'm also on LinkedIn at Lauren Loretto. Just search Lauren Loretto on LinkedIn, I think is what I'm trying to say. And then the She's Busy AF podcast, we have some really interesting, different than what we've ever had before guests coming on. Maybe Haley will make a special appearance here again soon. So like to hang out there as well. And otherwise, you can see our website at brandgoodtime.com. But thank you, Haley, for having me back.
Thanks so much for coming back. And thank you to our listeners for making it through this very chatty, rambly episode of Messy in the Middle. We'll be back next week with another one.